You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is Tuesday, February 13th, 2018, and I'm your host, Lucas Han. You can find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han, and you can read my articles at ClipsNation.com, as well as follow along there on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. So today, as we try to get a little caught up with what's been going on with the Clippers post-trade deadline, we're going to take a look at some recent Clippers games and then talk about how the new-look Clippers have done now that we have a little more of a substantial five-game sample size to work with since the Blake Griffin trade and these new players coming in. So first things first, let's get right into speeding through a couple of these recent Clippers games. The first one coming up against the Detroit Pistons on Friday, which is, almost forgotten about the Blake Griffin narrative. It was talked about a ton, but it didn't matter a lot during the game, and as a result, I feel like I didn't end up watching for it that much, if that makes sense. Obviously, it's something that going in, we were all looking for. Is Blake going to have a huge revenge game? Is there going to be any tension or fighting, especially with, like, Austin Rivers returning to the lineup, who we know, you know, necessarily a lot of people don't really get along with? But the drama was at a very low level. There was one play in transition where Blake Griffin got into it a little bit with Avery Bradley, of all people, who's not even a former teammate of Blake. There was a bump, and then they talked a little bit, and there was a double technical handed out, and that was pretty much it. It was relatively uneventful, I think. And the game was pretty competitive throughout. It was pretty close. The Clippers pulled away in the fourth quarter. They ended up winning by 13. They won the fourth quarter by 16. So you can see, obviously, that making a big difference here. And we see kind of a trend start to emerge from this new-look Clippers team where the scoring is pretty balanced. And between guys like Gallinari and Harris and Rivers and Williams, the Clippers basically put themselves in a position where whoever is playing best can have a little more scoring than everyone else. But the shot attempts are really balanced as well. 13 attempts for Gallinari, 14 for Harris, 13 for Rivers, 11 for Bradley, 13 for Harrell, 12 for Lou Williams. Those are the guys who you would consider to be the Clippers' six main scorers. DeAndre Jordan, you know, even though he's one of the most important players, doesn't score as much on the offensive end. And the other guys in the rotation on the second unit aren't, you know, big scorers at, you know, as well. So really, it's just very, it's a lot of balance between those six guys, which I think probably does two things. Well, we'll talk about that overall in a little bit. I just want to get through the game. And in terms of Blake Griffin had a little bit of an underwhelming game. 19 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists is fine, but he was 7 of 19 from the field, 1 of 7 from deep. He's been struggling his last few games as a Piston. His overall numbers as a Piston, his shooting efficiency numbers, are down in the dumps, and it's causing a little bit of angst for the Pistons, but, you know, I think it's something that'll work itself out. Blake Griffin, we all know, is a talented basketball player, so it's not a huge cause for concern on their side. So then the Clippers come off of that win in Detroit. They go into Philadelphia the next night, and they're a little bit listless. They lose this game to the Sixers by 14 points, and the main problem is, you know, well, there's two problems, really. First of all, the defense is just not there. They really, really, especially in the first half, I think they gave up 37 points in the first quarter, 32 points in the second quarter, so they gave up 69 points in the first half, which is just bad. It's just bad defense. And the Clippers have had a lot of first halves like this. Their second half defense is one of the best second half defenses in the NBA. But their first half defense has been abysmal. For some reason, they just don't come in with the right level of focus until after halftime. So Philadelphia has a really easy time getting going. Joel Embiid gets the foul line a lot, 29 points, 16 rebounds for Embiid. And the Sixers get a lot of backdoor cuts, lots of layups. TJ McConnell comes in off the bench and has 17 points and 8 assists on 6 of 7 shooting. They also make, you know, a good amount of threes. McConnell made 3 threes. JJ Redick made 5 threes. And the Clippers, for their part, shot pretty poorly from deep. 8 of 32, 25%. To an extent, it became just one of those nights for the Clippers where not a lot was falling. They actually got the game kind of close in the last few minutes of the fourth quarter. I think they got it down within like 6. And they just could not. They got a few open three-pointers that just would not fall. Gallinari, Lou Williams, Tobias Harris, 0 for 5 from 3 in this game. Austin Rivers, 1 of 8 from 3 in this game. So it was just one of those nights when the whole team has a bad shooting night like that. It's some combination of physical and mental. So I don't think it's necessarily anything to do with the quality of the team, more to do with being tired coming from Detroit the last night on this road trip. And when shots aren't falling, you get in your head a little bit. And then also part of the problem is Philadelphia has a pretty talented lineup. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. I mean, they have good players out there. And so the Clippers, kind of, Doc Rivers went with a little bit of a shorter rotation. He really only played 8 guys significantly. Montrezl Harrell only played 11 minutes because that matchup on the bench with Joel Embiid is really difficult for him with Embiid's size. So that kind of kept Montrez off the floor a little bit. And Montrez is a guy who, you know, we know has been huge for the Clippers in terms of bench scoring, and that left them without a little bit of a spark in the second unit, made them lean more heavily on those guys like Gallinari, Harris, Rivers, Williams, who weren't necessarily shooting well. And the only guy who really had a good game offensively for the Clippers in this one was Lou Williams, who was 9 of 21, 4 of 10 from deep, 23 points, 6 assists. But, I mean, Gallinari had a decent game, I guess, 22 points, but he was 3 of 9 from deep and missed some open looks. Harris, 7 of 16 from the field, 0 of 5 from deep. I said Austin, 4 of 14 from the field, 1 of 8 from deep. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this is a game that you go into that Pistons, 76ers back-to-back, and you probably think we need at least one of these, but it's not the kind of back-to-back where you need both. Like, if you were having a Phoenix-Dallas back-to-back, you'd really want to get both of those games. But I think between Detroit and Philly, you say, if we can split this, we're okay with it. It would be great to win both. It would be phenomenal to win both. But if we can split it, we're okay. And the Clippers did that. They were able to get the split. And then they go into last night's game, Monday night, against the Brooklyn Nets. And the Nets, frankly, are just really bad. There's not a whole lot of nuance to the Nets being one of the worst teams in the NBA. And it was pretty clear from the get-go last night. The Clippers went up big early and then kind of took their foot off the gas. And I said at halftime, I texted someone and said, this feels like the kind of game where the Clippers are a little bit asleep and it just takes one scoring burst from the Nets. As long as, you know, the Clippers build their lead up to like 15 and then they kind of lose focus, lose intensity. And the Nets hit a few threes in a row and all of a sudden it's a game again. And you've got to wake back up, and the Nets are already hot and rolling from that little burst. But it never really materialized for Brooklyn in this game. I still think it's something that probably could have happened. Montrezl Harrell, 6 of 6 from the field, 3 of 4 from the line, 15 points in 12 minutes. Just ridiculously efficient, both in terms of converting his minutes into shot attempts and converting his shot attempts into points. DeAndre Jordan also had a really good game in this one. This was probably the most energized we've seen him since all of the trade rumors, so hopefully this is a sign that he's getting back into form and can have a really good finish to the season. It's in his interest as well, if he's going to try to test free agency this summer, to have a great 30-game stretch here to close the year. He had 16 points, 17 rebounds, 8 of 11 from the field. Danilo Gallinari had an efficient 16 points and 5 rebounds on 6 of 9 from the field. Tobias Harris struggled a little bit in this one as well. 10 points and 8 rebounds on 4 of 12 shooting. Austin Rivers, I thought, had a really impressive game. You know, the 76ers game was a little rough for everyone, but in both the Pistons game and the Nets game, Austin Rivers really impressed me because he didn't go out there and try to score 25, 28, 30 points, which is a lot of times you just see Austin go out there and want to score. But under control, being very deferential in the offense, picking his spots, 8 of 13 from the field, 17 points, 4 assists, managing the pick and roll nicely. He's never going to make those amazing pocket passes. His court vision isn't at the level of like a pure point guard, but I think we're seeing him kind of play within the point guard role and be solid at it in the last few games. I don't think it's something that he's great at, and I don't think it's necessarily maximizing what you can get out of him, but with the pieces on the roster, if he can play in this role for stretches, and then there might be other stretches where you ask him to go out and be Austin, I think he's a real asset, and I think having him in the starting lineup is an interesting choice by Doc Rivers that has been, you know, fruitful so far in his return. Avery Bradley, you know, has been kind of weird offensively. He missed like a wide open layup in this game. He's not shooting the ball super well, but he's scoring on drives. He was 4 of 11 from the field for 11 points in this game. And then Lou Williams off the bench, 20 points, 8 of 16 shooting, 4 assists, leading that second unit offense along with Milos Teodosic. And the Clippers are able to, you know, kind of easily win this one, even though the Nets gave them a little bit of a scare at a couple points, but it never really turned into a full-on scare. And the Clippers went 114 to 101. Doc Rivers, interestingly, went with some weird lineups in the fourth quarter of this game, which kind of let the Nets cut into what had been a 20-plus point lead. He played Milos Teodosic, Lou Williams, and Avery Bradley together in a three-guard lineup. And I think, Doc Rivers is going to play three-guard lineups with this roster. I think it's inevitable when you have four players like the caliber of Teodosic, Williams, Bradley, and Rivers, and you don't really have a backup small forward. You're talking about a guy like Wesley Johnson, who's more of a power forward and not nearly as good as any of those four guards. So it makes sense to go with three-guard lineups when you feel like you can get away with it. I just don't think that Bradley, Teodosic, and Williams is the three-guard lineup that you want. Because what you look at when you have a Bradley, Teodosic, Williams three-guard lineup is you've only got one guy out there who's taller than 6'2", Milos Teodosic. You've only got one guy out there who you feel like is a capable defender, Avery Bradley. So of your three perimeter positions, you're tiny at two positions, and you can't defend at two positions. And then you've only got one guy out there who can really go out there and get his own buckets and score, which is Lou Williams. I don't think you're going to give the ball to Teodosic or Bradley and ask them, to go fill it up. So you're not scoring a ton. You're not playing very good defense. You don't have very much size. It's not a lineup that makes a lot of sense to me. I think if you put in Austin Rivers into this lineup, probably for Avery Bradley, but also for Teodosic. Let's say you go with Rivers, Bradley, Lou Williams. Still only one guy who's over 6'2", but now you've got two guys who you can give the ball to and ask to go score, and two guys who you feel good about using defensively against good offensive players in Rivers and Bradley. Or if you were to run with Teodosic, Williams, Rivers, you still only got one defender, so it depends on who the other team has out there on the floor. But again, you've got those two scorers, and you've got a little bit more size, which just makes matchups easier in general when you've got Austin and Milos out there, both around 6'5", instead of Lou and Avery Bradley, who are both around 6'1", 6'2". But, the Clippers had a big enough lead that they were able to absorb that run, even with Doc Rivers making some weird lineup choices. They come out with the win. They go 2-1 in this stretch, which is fine. And they position themselves still in ninth place in the Western Conference right now, but really right in that conversation. Half a game behind seventh, half a game behind eighth, one game behind sixth, two games behind fifth. So they're right in the mix of things. So now let's talk about the performances that the newest Clippers have put in, and how it's kind of reshaped this team's identity. But first, if you want to hear about more of any of those recent matchups that I just talked about, be sure to check out Locked On Pistons, Locked On Sixers, and Locked On Nets for their local perspectives. So let's talk about the three recent additions to the Clippers lineup and how they've played in the last five-game stretch, or in Danilo Gallinari's case, six-game stretch. So I'm including in this category Danilo Gallinari, who had missed almost the entire season with that pairing of glute injuries and came back the day after Blake Griffin was traded. So he had one extra game over the other guys who took a little while to get their physicals completed and moved out to Los Angeles and stuff. But really, six games with Gallinari, five games with Harris and Bradley, all three guys who've been in the starting lineup in each of those games, how they've played, how it's affected the Clippers' style overall, and the rotation in terms of other players. So let's just get started right away with Danilo Gallinari. Gallinari, I think one of the concerns with his injury was not just that he was missing so much time, which of course definitely hurt the Clippers after paying him big money this summer, but additionally that in like the 13 games that he had played, he hadn't really played well. His shooting percentages were low, his offensive output was low, and the question was, how is this going to, when he comes back, is he going to be better than that, or is he just going to be bad? And there's limitations to Gallo's game. He certainly is not he doesn't have the best athleticism in the NBA. He doesn't move especially well, especially after all of these injuries that he's had, not just this season, but in years past. But what we've seen in the last six games since he's come back is a quality offensive player, a guy who can score the ball. 16 points, 5.5 rebounds, 54% from the field, 45% from deep. He gets to the line a few times a game, which is something the Clippers have really been struggling to do. He scores from all three levels, meaning he he doesn't drive a lot because he doesn't have quickness, but he's able to take advantage of driving lanes when they present themselves. He can score kind of in that post range when he feels like he has a good matchup. He can score in the mid-range off the dribble, and he can shoot the three ball, obviously shooting 46% from three in this six-game stretch. So, yeah, I mean, these shooting numbers are going to cool down overall. He's not going to shoot 54, 46, 96 for the rest of the season. That would be ridiculous. But I think we're seeing kind of the type of game that Gallinari would like to play and that the Clippers would like for Gallinari to play. High volume of three-point shots attempted, kind of the same volume overall of touches as guys like Harris, Rivers, and Williams, and just being super efficient with it. So, by the way, I think I said 16 points a game. He's scoring 20 points a game in this stretch. I read the wrong column. It wasn't 16. It was 20 points a game, by the way. But, yeah, so, I've been really pleased with what Gallinari has done. He has his limitations. They're obvious. But I think the bigger concern when he was out was not that he had the limitations that we knew he had all along, but that his strengths hadn't been there in the games that he had played. So it's good to see him get back healthy, get these strengths going again. Hopefully he can stay healthy for the rest of the season and, you know, be a big part of the Clippers offense in their playoff push. Kind of sharing the forward positions with Gallinari, you know, I think technically we would call Tobias Harris the power forward and Danilo Gallinari the small forward. See, I even messed it up right there, so that kind of shows how fluid the situation is. Just because Gallinari was starting at small forward for the Clippers before, so he had been slotted in at small forward, and Tobias Harris had been playing power forward for Detroit. So in my mind, it kind of makes sense that Gallo is still the small forward and Harris is still the power forward, but it doesn't really matter. The way the Clippers are playing right now, the positions are interchangeable. The way that Gallinari and Harris both play, the positions are interchangeable, and offensively, positions are fake anyway. You can make whatever positions you want for the system you want to run. It really matters more defensively when you're matching up against a team that runs the traditional point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center lineup. You need to know, well, who's going to guard small forwards? And in this case, it'll probably end up switching by matchup, just depending. You know, so many other teams are playing a similar style offensively with two kind of fluid combo forwards that the Clippers can match up however they feel best. Harris, I think, is a little bit of a more athletic defender than Gallinari. Gallinari might be a little more of a solid overall guy just because he's got some more experience in the league, and Harris has still been trying to make strides as a capable defender in recent years. But, Harris started out really strongly in his first couple games as a Clipper. 24 points in his first game, 19 points in his second game. But both of these games had kind of huge shot attempt volumes. I think part of that may have been with Austin Rivers being out, the Clippers were missing one of those weapons. But he had 19 attempts in the first game, 20 attempts in the second game. And then in the three games since, he's had 14, 16, and 12. He's had a couple bad games. I don't think there's necessarily any huge cause for concern. You know, one game, he went 0-5 from deep. That was the game that everyone struggled in Philadelphia. And then, one thing that I've been really pleased with Harris has been his rebounding. He's averaging 6.6 rebounds a game. He has 8 in each of the Clippers' last 3 games. And for a guy who had been averaging 5 rebounds a game in Detroit this season, and then he's coming in to play power forward for the Clippers, and maybe, you know, you're a little worried about how that's going to go, it's been nice to see him go get, you know, rebounds a little more consistently. And then flipping back to Gallinari, who's back in lineup, also 5.5 rebounds since he came back, and then getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves with Avery Bradley. Bradley's had a couple of 8-rebound games, and he's averaging 4 rebounds a game in his time with the Clippers. So I think we are seeing an overall rebounding boost in the lineup, with Harris coming near to Blake Griffin's numbers, but then Gallinari and Avery Bradley bringing rebounding from the wing positions, really kind of helping the overall rebounding effort out. The Clippers, even though they've had DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, have been a poor rebounding team the last few years. So it would be really nice to see them be actually a really good rebounding team. And I think that kind of fits with this new identity that we're talking about, where they don't have a star. They share the ball more. Not necessarily that they're a better passing team, because they obviously lost individual passing talent with Blake Griffin going down, but just that the shot distribution is more evenly spread out. And that means that the overall duties of the team are more evenly spread out. Rebounding, defensive, everyone chips in a little bit in every category. So it's kind of a different build than the Clippers had in the last few years, where it's like, DeAndre Jordan is going to do all the rebounding. Blake Griffin is going to do a ton of the scoring. JJ Redick is going to do all the shooting. Chris Paul is going to do all the passing. And Luke Mbamute is going to do all the wing defense. everyone, you know, it's like division of labor versus in this, it's like everyone doing a little bit of everything. So, I mean, I think that neither of those are absolutes. It's a spectrum. And I don't know that there's necessarily a right or wrong spot to be on the spectrum. I think it more depends on the style, you know, who you have on your team determines the style that you play. So Avery Bradley, like I said, he's been a little weird offensively. I think probably the biggest thing is that he's just not making threes. He's, I think, one of nine in his five games with the Clippers, which means he's, first of all, not taking very many. And second of all, he's only made one, of course. And then he had actually really struggled coming out of Detroit shooting the three ball recently. In his last six games with the Pistons, he was 6 of 27 from deep in those games. Trying to do quick math in my head. But, I mean, really, really struggling to shoot the three ball. Going back to, I believe, December, for a guy who's normally been a very good three-point shooter over the course of his career, a little bit concerning, might have to do with, you know, that groin, hamstring, sports hernia, whatever he's got going on there, that's leaving him a little underneath 100%. But we've seen his defense make an impact. We see his length make an impact in helping out on the rebounding side of things. I'm not sure that the team is best when he's playing as big of minutes as he's playing. Doc Rivers has actually been really consistent with him, keeping him right around 27 minutes. We'll see. I think that there might be games where you need to use him a little bit more because you need a defender at the guard positions, and Teodosic and Lou Williams don't bring that to you. And so, of course, you prioritize Lou Williams over Milos Teodosic at this point. I think that's kind of obvious. But then when it comes to if you only can give a certain amount of minutes to guards who can't defend, then that means the other minutes are going to guards who can defend, and Avery Bradley is that guy. But when you can get away with having guys out there who aren't as defensively strong, or if you only need one good defender at the guard positions, I think that guy obviously should be Austin Rivers, and Avery Bradley should be taking a little bit of a backseat to Lou and Milos. So we'll see how it develops. We'll see maybe Avery's offensive game will come along a little bit. If he can start hitting shots, if he can start hitting three-point shots and stay out of the inefficient mid-range, I think that that will change a lot of things. But, you know, we're going to have to see that to believe it, I think, at this point. And I think one other note is that Avery Bradley staying on the Clippers kind of through the trade deadline, that is, kind of affects their rotation. Tyrone Wallace had been playing a little bit because Milos Teodosic missed a couple games with a foot injury, but now with Milos back, certainly seems like Tyrone Wallace is out of the rotation. It kind of makes sense logically, and we've seen it in practice with what Doc Rivers has been doing. It's unfortunate because Wallace has been playing well, but he's also not quite a complete player. So I think he is probably better suited for a third-string role, playing minutes when someone goes down for a couple games, but I don't think he's someone you want to be relying on in your playoff rotation. And really, you know, I think he has his usage. Like the other night, I was talking about that bad three-guard lineup earlier in the show that the Clippers went to with Teodosic, Bradley, and Williams. I think if you feel the need to go to a three-guard lineup because you feel like you have a hole at backup small forward, that's where I would buy minutes for Tyrone Wallace over a guy like Avery Bradley. Tyrone Wallace brings a little bit of size. He doesn't shoot. Bradley doesn't shoot also. And he brings defense, maybe not quite as much of a reputation or discipline as Avery Bradley, but he has a little bit of extra length and activity, and he gets out in transition. So, yeah, I think that there are ways for Tyrone Wallace to get minutes on this team. I don't know if he's going to necessarily tap into them, especially when the Clippers, you know, get to decision time with him reaching the end of his two-way contract. They have an open roster spot. I think right now they have an open roster spot, and because they saved a little bit of money in the Blake Griffin trade, they have the money to sign a rest-of-season deal. I think right now they might be waiting through buyout season to see if someone who they feel like can really help them becomes available. But I don't think they make that move unless like the perfect name comes up. It'll come down to choosing between Wallace and CJ Williams for that last roster spot. CJ Williams is now healthy. We know that Doc Rivers trusts CJ at the small forward position. He was starting at small forward over Wesley Johnson earlier in the year. I think probably what happens is Tyrone goes back to the G League, and the Clippers use him in the normal two-way capacity of if Milos needs to sit out a game on a back-to-back, then they call up Tyrone for that game to play some rotation minutes, but otherwise he's in the G League. and CJ Williams gets that last roster spot, I think CJ is a guy who you trust in your playoff rotation as your backup small forward. Move Wesley Johnson over to backup power forward. That makes a lot of sense to me. I think that's a lineup that the Clippers can feel comfortable with. So, thank you guys for listening. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJhan, or you can email me, at lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. All right, see you guys in our next episode. This is Lucas Jhan signing off for Locked On Clippers.